This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Good morning, good morning. Happy rainy Sunday, August 19th. You know, the weeds around my house are almost waist high. I'm sorry that we have drought here in this area, but please, someone with a working lawnmower or weed cutter, please email me and ask how much you take to come cut the grass down at my place. 11 o'clock on the wake-up call. Special thanks to those on Lynchburg's 89.9 for listening in. And support for WNRN today also comes from your Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield authorized agent, Herb Bennett. As your local agent in Central Virginia, Herb provides expert knowledge and personal service in designing your individual health insurance plan. Your health is worth protecting, and you shouldn't let it go uninsured. For a quote, you can give agent Herb Bennett a call, 855-425-0090, or visit online, agentherb.com. All right, today, a topic I've been wanting to discuss for a while, based on an article that I read in our other weekly magazine, thanks to The Hook for supporting Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. A couple guests in the room, one who will be participating by phone in a short while. Let's see. We have Jason Whitehead here. Jason is a freelance journalist. Good morning, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Jason wrote an article, freelance journalist wrote an article that appeared March of 2012 on religion in the locker room. Also in the room with me, UVA professor in the UVA Law School, Douglas Laycock. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks again. I assume that neither of you two had anything to do outside today. That's why you chose to come down to WNRN. In a short bit, we'll have Professor Matt Hedstrom with us. He's a professor from UVA Department of Religious Studies. While we talk about religion in the locker room, Jason, you started, the focus of your article was UVA's locker room.
Right.
What prompted you to write that article?
Well, initially it was just as simple as receiving a press release that UVA sent out about how Coach Mike Lennon, the head football coach at UVA, had won the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Coach of the Year Award. And that just got me to thinking, in light of all we ever hear about Tim Tebow and religion in the NFL and everything that was made over him or has been made over him in the last few years, you know, what was the degree to which this was going on here at the university? And I thought an extra level that was added to that was just the simple fact that we're here in Charlottesville, where Thomas Jefferson started the university, and he's the one who coined the phrase the separation of church and state. So just that whole dynamic, that was the initial inspiration.
Professor Laycock, is someone from the UVA Law School, is someone who's recognized as one of the superstars in talking about this religion and First Amendment, et cetera? Is this, I realize that Jason is sitting next to you, but is this an important conversation to have?
Well, sure, it's an important conversation to have. It's a complicated conversation, and both sides tend to oversimplify it, but it's certainly important to talk about.
Let's see if everything is set properly. Matt, are you with me?
I am.
Thank you so much, Professor Matt Hedstrom, UVA's Department of Religious Studies, participating by phone from St. Louis. Is that correct?
That is right.
So, important enough topic for you to sign up on an early Sunday morning and join us.
That's right. No, I think it's a very important topic. It has many resonances, sort of legal and historical and religious, and I'm delighted to be part of the conversation.
Well, thanks for, are you sitting on your hotel bed?
That's exactly where I am, yep.
Excellent. Jason, as the publisher, or not the publisher, the author of this article, you visited with, well, that's not true. You couldn't visit with the coaches at UVA. Now, you followed a little bit. Went to a church that was hosting Coach London and sat and listened to him give sort of an unusual sermon, correct?
Yeah, it was part kind of maybe the talk you might hear at a pep rally or in the locker room right before the game, and certainly part sermon, it seemed like. It was in a church out at out in Esmont, and it was very rousing. It got me excited, actually, a little bit, but to charge out onto the field.
You talk about how it was part pep rally and part sermon. A little explanation.
Well, it was just very... it was very inspirational. It was about giving of yourself to the greater whole, and he kept using football as a metaphor the whole time. Like he drew on the analogy of how it takes every member of the team to score a touchdown, whether it's the offensive lineman or the wide receiver or the quarterback, and that it takes all of these little pieces to achieve the greater goal. So, and he was bringing that back to your daily life and how you might not always receive the acclaim for what you do, but that he kept using the phrase commitment with service and
faith, family, and football.
Right.
We find that several places in the article.
Right.
Matt, when you talk about faith, family, and football, is that something that you find in religion? I mean, sort of that grouping of things. Can you see that working in Department of Religious Studies?
Well, certainly when you look at those three words, the word that stands out is football, right? We're used to hearing faith and family put together in all kinds of contexts. But, there's a long history of entanglement of religion and athletics in the United States. And so, if you look at that history, which goes back into the 19th century, it's really, in a sense, not that surprising to see football added to the faith and family mix. It's a place to sort of reach what the advertisers would call a key demographic, right? Young men, to use the celebrity that comes with high-profile athletics to get a message out. So, it really isn't a surprise, I don't think, to see all three of those together.
But, Professor Laycock, is it concerning, or what's the proper word, disconcerting, to find those three words together in something that is being espoused to a young age group?
No. I mean, whether it's concerning or not depends on how it's done. We have two sets of constitutional rights at stake here. All the players and the coaches are citizens of the United States. They have free speech rights. They have the free exercise of religion rights. And when Coach London goes out to a church in Esmont and gives a talk, he's entirely within his own free speech rights, right? He's not leaning on any students out there. Nobody's out there who didn't want to be there. And then we have an establishment clause that says government is supposed to be neutral about religion, not pick and choose among religions or between religion and non-belief. And the coaches are agents of the state, and, they have to comply with that. So so this has to be done in a way in which, no player feels leaned on, but we haven't heard anything so far to suggest that that's being violated.
And that will be part of the conversation as we continue along, talking about religion in the locker room. Jason Whitehead, freelance journalist, having written an article about does practicing Christianity in a public school locker room, specifically in UVA's football locker room, violate the Constitution? Our guest today, Jason Whitehead, who wrote the article back in March of this year. Matt Hedstrom, a professor at the UVA Department of Religious Studies, and Professor Douglas Laycock from the UVA's Law School. It's 11:09 here on the Wake Up Call. We will be taking calls a little later on the hour with Matt Hedstrom here on phone. We'll be taking your calls and comments, questions, and bringing them through. I'll be reading them, so that's the best way to do this instead of taking up two lines for the day. 979-0919, that's 979-0919, and then 877 WNRN Rocks. That's 877 WNRN Rocks. Gentlemen, and we'll start with you, Professor Laycock. You said you haven't heard anything so far that would make you be concerned about this. What would make you be concerned about this?
What would make me be concerned about this would be if we had a player who said, look, I don't want to be there, but I don't have any choice. You know, the coaches expect me to be there. Or, you know, I'm worried about the coach's opinion of me if I'm not there. I'm worried about playing time if I'm not there. You know, that would be deeply concerning. And if there are any basis for that player's perceptions, that would be unconstitutional. But if some of the players, even a lot of the players, choose to participate voluntarily, they've got a right to do that.
And Professor Hedstrom, what would concern you about this being an issue worth, you know, public to frown upon and greater discussion?
Well, the only thing I would add to what Professor Laycock just said is that we're talking about a team environment, and maybe especially in football of all sports, there's such a strong sense of community and of obligation to others and of being part of the whole that it's not hard to imagine a kind of social pressure or a kind of environment in which if one chose not to participate, there could be certain, you know, social costs. You know, I don't think we have clear evidence of that from Jason's reporting thus far, but, you know, that would certainly be what would concern me.
Jason, you felt that the university, I don't know, blocked you from talking to the coaches. I mean, there was always, my memory of the article is that, and by the way, you can go online and find the article. I just Googled Seville Weekly, God, football, and it came up near the very top of the list. You attempted to speak with Coach London at one season, and he was unavailable due to recruiting. And then you tried a month or 2 months later, and he was unavailable because now it was time for spring football. And so you asked to speak to one of the assistant coaches who, even though I believe at some point made it clear that he was proud of his faith, mm-hmm. then didn't want to talk about it in a public way. A little bit more about that for us.
Yeah, I don't know how much should be made of it, really, but I guess initially when I contacted them and asked to talk to Coach London, it wasn't too far off of the announcement that he had just won the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Coach of the Year award. So I did think that it was a little odd that I wasn't granted access to him at that point. I certainly do see later on that he may have been busy doing this or recruiting. And realistically, it may not have even had anything to do with the religious element. As the local Covenant football coach pointed out, Dave Rocco, their probably greatest concern is recruiting and perhaps if it brought any sort of negative attention on the university, would that impact recruiting? But I did find it didn't necessarily line up that I was kind of continually told that these coaches did not want to talk about their faith, but they were very public about it elsewhere, as on websites like with Coach Laser or or Lennon as well, who then just like a week later was speaking at this church. But I didn't know how much to make of it, really. But they certainly are rather outspoken believers.
Professor Hedstrom, and again, you know, we're talking about gentlemen who certainly, as Professor Laycock has already mentioned, have every legal and constitutional right to talk about their faith and can choose to talk about it or not talk about it when and where they choose. Is it in any way interesting to you as a professor of religious studies that you choose to talk about it in some areas but not in others?
Well, let me pick up on something that Jason just mentioned, which I think gets to your question to a certain degree, and that's about recruiting. It's not explicit in the article, but it seems to me that, you know, as colleges and universities as a whole have abandoned the idea of in loco parentis to a large degree, that still remains in athletics. A lot of parents feel like they are entrusting their sons and daughters to the care of the coach. And when they're thinking about what program to go to, I think they think a lot about that. And, you know, not to be too cynical about this, but I think it probably doesn't hurt in recruiting for coaches to present themselves as upstanding men of faith. We will take good care of your sons and daughters. So that may be an area in which coaches are quite happy to talk about their faith. And again, this is not to question at all the sincerity of Coach London or Coach Bennett, who's also mentioned in the article, and their faith, but it certainly, it seems to me in that context, probably also helps them in their jobs.
A real quick question. All three gentlemen will start with Professor Hedstrom. Are you a football fan, and do you follow the University of Virginia and support them?
Yes, I'm a football fan. I have some, I'm sort of a hypocrite in a way, in that I have some concerns about the place of athletics in higher education, and yet I'm a fan at the same time. Absolutely, I support the University of Virginia teams.
Professor Laycock.
Yes.
And Jason Whitehead.
Yeah, I'm a huge football fan. I have to confess that I don't really follow UVA to a great extent. I didn't go to school here. So.
All right, and I'll admit to being a big college sports fan, and as a graduate of UVA, I support them as well. Season ticket holder for quite some time.
Can I say one more thing about the in loco parentis point? I'm sure Matt Hedstrom is right that that's an attraction for parents. It's you also need to look at it from the coach's perspective, right? These kids are under a lot of pressure. Everybody wants a piece of them, you know, agents, groupies. You make a big investment of time and effort, and you spend a scholarship on these kids, and then he gets in trouble and he's off the program. That's a loss, and it happens a lot. It hadn't happened much at UVA, but at least in my time here. But it happens a lot at college football programs all over the country. There's a story about it just yesterday in either the Times or the Wall Street Journal. And so, you know, coaches do a lot of in loco parentis things to try to keep their kids out of trouble and focused on school and football, and faith that may be part of that. Checking up on whether they're going to class is part of that. There's lots of things coaches do, and there are real reasons for it.
Yeah, I'd like to add actually a little bit. My feeling was, as I kept looking more into this, like rather than more it being an issue of this coach is trying to get this particular student athlete into heaven or something like that, that it was equally important or that faith was equally important as a construct, really, to allow the players to operate under I don't want to say self-help necessarily, but it provided this really convenient framework, and it's very traditional to football. I mean, going back to the 60s, this faith family football framework. So,
11:19 here on the Wake Up Call. We are talking with Jason Whitehead and Professors Matt Hedstrom and Douglas Laycock about Jason's article, Religion in the Locker Room. Actually, that may not be the title of your article, but that was the topic of your article.
Right.
Does practicing Christianity in the public school locker rooms violate the Constitution? We'll open up the phone lines if you have a question or a comment for any of our guests today. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. 90% chance of showers today, highs in the mid-70s, a little warmer in Richmond area. 60% chance of showers tonight, lows 60 to 65, and 30% chance of morning showers tomorrow, highs right around 80 degrees. Right now it's a cloudy, rainy day out there, 64 in the valley, 65 in Lynchburg, 72 in Richmond, and 67 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming also supported by Dixon Disposal, family-owned and operated for 40 years. Dixon Disposal works to promote green awareness. Dixon offers all-in-one can recycling, so you won't have to spend the time sorting or trying to figure out if your items are recyclable. These recyclable items don't end up in the landfill. For more info on the all-in-one can recycling, DixonDisposal.com or 978-2111. All right, back to our guests, Professor Matt Hedstrom, Professor Douglas Laycock, and Jason Whitehead. We were talking about the parents and the recruiting and the, I don't know if the proper word is the use of faith and family to go with the football recruiting, but let me talk about that for a minute. Especially in loco parentis, is it if the faith is made so clear during the recruiting, and let's assume that it is, if you make it clear enough that it's in the media and those whose living room you do not visit are aware of your faith. If you make it so clear to the parents and the individual who you are recruiting, is it a problem when you choose to go to that university and then find that the majority of your peers are having prayers on the field, that your coach is having the Lord's Prayer before any games, even if you do feel uncomfortable by that? You've made your choice. Professor Laycock.
Well, I think that too depends on how it's being done. If you come to a program where you know a majority of the athletes are of a particular faith, yeah, you've made your choice. But if what you mean is, can the coaches lean on players to participate? Can the coaches be ministers as well as coaches and be promoting religion as long as they tell the recruits before they come? No, telling them before they come doesn't solve the constitutional problem. Students are entitled to come to the University of Virginia and retain their religious liberty, whether they're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or non-believers or whatever, and I'm sure we got all of those on the football team. If we were violating the Constitution, we wouldn't make it okay by telling people in advance we were going to do it. But again, whether we're violating the Constitution or actually serving free exercise values depends all on how this is being done.
Jason, when you were doing your research, you were near the very end allowed to speak to one current member of the football team, correct?
Right. The punter, Jimmy Howe.
Was there any, did you get any feedback, whether spoken or just sort of something that you heard or saw in body behavior that made you think that, yes, maybe there is a little peer pressure here, and it just goes unspoken because those people made their choice to come to this school after we told them how this program was run?
Well, the punter, Hal, he did describe, it seemed to me like this this environment. I don't know if he was being a little hyperbolic when he said it, but he said that there were Bibles everywhere, and he seemed to be describing an environment where Christian players were witnessing to non-Christian players. There's also just the added element of which he confirmed of just the amount of religion that has been increased since Coach London took the job, which was this Fellowship of Christian Athletes coming on board pretty much full time to do the football and the basketball program, and the degree to which that increased, like a Bible study had been added on Thursday night as well as a devotional on Sunday. So it's kind of hard to imagine, considering what we've already mentioned, with how close-knit, how much team is emphasized in football above all other sports, that there wouldn't be some sort of pressure to be involved, especially if you were happen to be agnostic or atheistic. I could see it being a little difficult of an environment. So,
Professor Hedstrom, speaking from a religious history standpoint, would you envision this being difficult for someone who was not of Christian faith, to whether it's peer pressure from the age group being 17 to 22 or 23, or whether it's not being of the Christian faith and sort of having to make the decision to participate or step aside in, you know, the religious history of which you've done your work?
Well, if we sort of assume, which I think is fair to assume, that part of the reason, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes is interested in working in football programs is not simply a kind of pastoral role, meaning they want to serve the religious needs of athletes who are already, say, evangelical Christians, but an evangelistic role, meaning they want to use a program, its both its internal dynamics and its sort of status in the community, as a tool of evangelism. I think by its very nature, we can speculate there that there might be some kind of pressure or outreach going on there. Now, Professor Laycock could speak more certainly about the sort of constitutional issues involved in kind of locker room evangelism rather than locker room religion per se, and whether it, you know, happens peer to peer, what that means.
But before we get into the whether or not that's a fine line or a gray line in terms of constitutional and legal issues, in terms of researching the history, what I'm trying to find out whether or not the average individual, whether of a specific age or a specific religion, can comfortably step outside of the circle if the vast majority, or even not the vast majority, even if a large number of people in your group are participating in a specific religious event. Can you stand aside in the locker room if, because a college football team is 85 players, and then a wide number of those participating through coaching or other helpful roles. And if even a quarter of that, you're talking 20 to 25 to maybe 30 people, and if your program is pushed on this, I think you have an even larger number of people participating in the Lord's Prayer before you go out. How easy is it for someone to step aside and just watch, or to sit at their locker and bow their head to do their own sort of pregame concerns.
Yeah. Boy, that is, I mean, I think you're right that in a sense that's one of the real critical questions here. It's, you know, I'm not sure that historical sort of framework is going to help us understand that, because it seems to me that it would depend so much on the particulars of a given locker room, the particulars of a given team, and how those dynamics work, and, you know, as you were saying, kind of what percentage of team members are participating, and so I could just imagine a whole range from a very sort of coercive and uncomfortable environment to one where there are no problems at all. And I just, that depends on how the leadership of a given team, you know, handles that.
And Jason, when you talk to, whether it was the coaches or the university or to the punter, Jimmy Howe, did you get a feeling for what percentage of the team is participating in the Christian events, whether it's prayer study or others?
Not specifically. I did have a chance to talk with one player who, I'm not sure if he even made it into the article, but his name was Joseph Williams, and he was a safety, and he actually described himself in sort of pan-religious terms, like he was like a Muhammad as a prophet, as Jesus was a prophet, on and on. But he said that a great number of players on the team were, in fact, believers and Christian believers, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I think if you went to any program, that's probably the case, and it starts very early. Like I recently wrote about a player. He just graduated from Liberty, and he's trying to make the Jacksonville Jaguars team. But he was a star here at Monticello, Mike Brown. And I was asking his parents, you know, what was the key ingredient to him making it thus far? And the first thing off his mother's tongue was God, his faith in God. And I think that's probably very, very true across much of football. So,
11:31 on the Wake Up Call, as we talk about religion in the football or the sports locker room, and is practicing Christianity in the public schools violate the Constitution? Our legal expert, Professor Douglas Laycock from UVA's Law School, Professor Matt Hedstrom from UVA's Department of Religious Studies, and Jason Whitehead, who wrote this article. It appeared back in March of 2012. In the other weekly newspaper here in the Charlottesville area. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. With the school year on its way, it's Blue Ridge for book bags from the North Face, Patagonia, and Mountain Hardware. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond, and online it's brms.com. Professor Laycock, we're sort of, I pushed the question towards Professor Hedstrom not from the legal and constitutional aspect, but if you do come to the University of Virginia or go to any public school to accept a scholarship and be a player, and you are uncomfortable with the faith that is put forward, can you do anything about it? I mean, is this a place where you can say, I realize that I accepted and you told me about it, but now that I've seen how much Christianity or any religion is put forth here, I'm uncomfortable?
Well, of course you can, but it's realistically, it's very difficult. Peer pressure is real, and you know, we know about it in all sorts of contexts, and this is just one more place where it operates. You know, if a quarter of the team is not participating, I wouldn't worry too much about peer pressure. And you know, I used to teach at Texas, the University football game there. Most of the players from both teams would kneel and pray together in the center of the field, but a third or a quarter of them would be running off and not participating. And so I never worried about peer pressure too much. But as the number of non-participants gets smaller, of course, the amount of pressure is going to get greater. But peer pressure, The rest of the team are not agents of the state. Peer pressure is not a constitutional problem. What's a problem is if the coaches are creating the pressure, or if the coaches are creating the occasions for peer pressure to operate more effectively or more coercively, or if they're not doing anything to reduce the excesses of it, right? It's one thing if a team member comes and witnesses to you and tries to persuade you. It's another thing if non-participants are harassed or treated badly, and coaches need to police that. But peer pressure in itself is not unconstitutional. Now the minority group of players who feels uncomfortable, they can speak up, they can talk to the coaches, they can complain, they can file lawsuits. But all of that is very difficult, right? If you're already feeling pressure and you're already feeling part of an isolated minority, typically folks are pretty reluctant to call attention to themselves. And so, there are things they can do, but it wouldn't be surprising if they just if they didn't do anything.
We were talking earlier about in loco parentis. We got a call. By the way, you can call as well, 979-0919-877-WNRN-ROCKS. A high school football coach from Pennsylvania called and said, dealt with the issue and believes that religion is a factor, but the more important factor is the ethics. Doesn't see constitutional issue with using religion for its ethics. And, Jason, I think I found this, I don't know if it was in your article or in one of the comments or other articles that came about from your Sivo Weekly article, which was that coaches are held responsible for the behavior of the players. And we touched on this shortly earlier in the hour. And so aren't they there to make sure that their players also have proper ethics and beliefs? Is that a constitutional flaw or problem, Professor Laycock?
Well, they're not there to make sure their players have proper religious beliefs.
But ethical beliefs come from religion?
Well, for a lot of people, ethical beliefs come from religion. But again, it is not the function of the coaches to turn out Christian players. It plainly is in the environment we have and in the coach's own sense of personal responsibility. It is part of the function of the coaches to keep their kids out of trouble, right? And they do lots of things for that, right? The football players and in particular, and athletes more generally, are more closely monitored than any other students on grounds, right? So, I assume the football players have a curfew. Nobody else has a curfew. They have mandatory study halls. They have people checking up on whether they go to class and not just the professor. So the coaches are doing a lot to keep their kids out of trouble. And this faith thing, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, I'm sure the coach's view is just part of that. Ethics is a legitimate function. Both church and state have always spoken to ethical matters. Instilling faith is not the function of the coaches.
Professor Hedstrom, we talk about it's not their job. The coaches are not there to instill religious beliefs. But when you look back through history, it seems like many leaders come from religion or have a religious belief that they push forward. Whether they're seen to be good or bad leaders later on in time. Am I incorrect in that?
No, certainly that's right. In the realm of American politics, of course, we see this all the time, in which our presidents, our political leaders use religious language to both to back up their authority, but also to address important issues of the day, whether those are war and peace or social justice questions or, race relations. I mean, the whole range of issues that political leaders deal with. We certainly see political leaders invoking religious language, and we often call this American civil religion. And, but that doesn't seem to be quite what we're seeing in the in the Jason's article, what we're seeing there is a much more particular kind of evangelical Christianity.
All right, 11:37 here on the Wake Up Call, as we talk about religion in public school locker rooms. Jason Whitehead, Professor Matt Hedstrom, Professor Douglas Laycock.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Market for Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on newsstands Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find on this week's Hook.
And the loss of its anchor grocery store might be seen as a huge problem, but The Hook finds the departure of Giant isn't the biggest news at Seminole Square. The shopping center will soon get a makeover thanks to its willingness to let a new road bore through its center. Today's teenagers just aren't clamoring for a driver's license like they did in the motor-happy generations. What's driving them to abstain from this American rite of passage? And Albemarle County starts issuing criminal charges to the owners of dogs running loose off their property. The Hook, you can handle the truth. And today's programming on WNRN is brought to you by Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and brgtshirts.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Perdue at noon. That's the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Drew brings you the roots of alternative, because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue, only on WNRN. 979-0919-877-WNRN-ROCKS. You want to call in with your question or comment? Jason, we were talking about whether or not people felt peer pressure, and something about the UVA baseball team. A nearly 100% group goes out near the third base area before a home game and has what appears to be a prayer, a group prayer, but there's a Jewish player on the team who stays in the locker room. Did you find or hear about any peer pressure and unhappy feelings that might be involved there?
No, I didn't. I didn't come across that until right before the article was about to publish. But I was really struck by that, and I don't know if anybody that has been to a UVA baseball game has seen that, but it's a very public display where I would say, all but five players jog out beyond the third baseline and kneel in this circle, and they're out there for at least a couple of minutes, and they point to the sky, and then they kind of individually then trot back, and I don't know if there would be peer pressure. Perhaps they've very much communicated to the players that remain in the dugout that they're not, but I did think it was unusual.
Professor Hedstrom, isn't part of all religious faith, whether it's Christianity, which I seem to have spent much of the hour discussing, but isn't part of all religious faith to witness to others, to explain what you understand and why it's important to you, and in some way, whether great or small, to try and pull another person into understanding your belief and have it become a major part of their life as well through the happiness that you have?
No, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think that religions vary considerably on that point. Some that are especially much more sort of ethnically rooted aren't necessarily as evangelistic as others. Now, obviously, we've been talking mostly about American evangelical Christianity. That's the environment that the Fellowship of Christian Athletes comes out of, and just from the name itself, right? Evangelicalism. We see that evangelism is at the heart of evangelical Christianity, and so that would be much more the case than if, you know, other religious traditions were the predominant tradition in a locker room.
Professor Laycock, we got a caller with another comment that I hope I'm not reading this incorrectly, but it seems like what they're saying is that religion should be treated as a framework, and that players have the choice of religion even if they are not Christian, and public schools grant that freedom.
Well, I think that's right, and what we're discussing is whether we have reason to believe that that's not the situation in the UVA athletic programs. I mean, the problem to be concerned about is not the appearance of Christianity or the appearance of Christianity in public places or the appearance of Christianity in the locker room. The problem to be concerned about is freedom of choice with respect to religion on the part of all the athletes on the teams.
So, like, you lose your starting role because you're not becoming involved in the Lord's Prayer or showing up on the Thursday night Bible study.
Well, that would be an extreme case, but yes, right? And you can be penalized in worse ways than that. So Jason is struck by the public prayer at third base before baseball games. I'm much reassured by five players feeling free to stay in the dugout and very publicly not participate in that, right? And, you know, we don't know what back and forth there may be between the participants and the non-participants, but five is not a trivial percentage of a baseball team. And if five feel free to quite publicly not participate, I take that as a pretty good sign.
We talked very briefly, I believe, about the Establishment Clause. And I want to make sure that we give a good definition of that, because people hear the separation of church and state. And my understanding is that the separation of church and state is not the Establishment Clause. Correct?
Well, the phrase separation of church and state does not itself appear in the Constitution. It has a long history, most prominently in a letter Mr. Jefferson wrote in 1803, but 160 years before that in work that Roger Williams wrote in Rhode Island about religious liberty. And separation of church and state has become a very common paraphrase of the Establishment Clause in particular, or the Establishment and Free Exercise Clauses together. And it's not a terribly precise paraphrase. It means different things to different people. But certainly the core idea that the religious choices of the American people should be separated from the powers of government is at the heart of the two religion clauses. And in that sense, separation of church and state is a pretty good paraphrase.
And, Jason, we've been talking, or I've been talking, a lot about the University of Virginia and how this applies to that. But when you did your article, again, Siva Weekly, back in March of 2012, you can Google this up. I did Jason Whitehead, Religion, Football, and it came up. Is that when you were doing your studies, you found out from speaking to other coaches, those outside of UVA, that similar beliefs and events took place at Clemson, at Richmond, and, you know, your studies would... But talk about that for a minute. This isn't focused on the University of Virginia.
No, it's remarkably runs deep throughout at least the SEC or the Big Ten, probably areas that you would describe as being like red state areas, and perhaps even broader than that. But I talked to Bobby Pruitt, who was a defensive coordinator here in 2009, but coached Marshall for a number of years, you know, Randy Moss and Byron Leftwich and so forth. And they were very religious, and he had coached with Spurrier and a number of other coaches, and talked about the level of religion there. And then even when I was researching recently, just kind of reacquainting myself with this topic, came across an article about Georgia's coach, Mark Richt, who apparently takes players on a retreat every Friday where they have Bible studies. And I've even read something about Spurrier in South Carolina where they have a prayer over the PA system. So it's something where it would probably be really surprising to look and find what coach wasn't practicing some sort of evangelical Christianity. And it certainly should, or seems like it would be in most locker rooms. So
if I can hop in for a second.
Sure.
I think here is a place where history can really help us in thinking about the pervasiveness of this connection between religion and sports. Jason mentions that the Fellowship of Christian Athletes is now 60 years old, formed in the 1950s, but we can go back 100 years before that to the founding of the YMCA movement in Britain and in the United States, and see, you know, how long and deep this connection is between athletics and evangelical Christianity. One of the most prominent revivalists of the early 20th century was a man named Billy Sunday, who had been a former professional baseball player and would give these sort of testimonials of his years of drinking and womanizing as a professional baseball player and how he got saved. And he gave some of the most kind of dynamic and athletic revival performances that you could imagine. And so, you know, for 150 years, the evangelical Christians have been using athletics in this way. And so, you know, it just shouldn't surprise us at all to see this across the country in athletic departments, high school and college.
Professor Laycock, is this, we talk about, you know, the constitutional issue, and is any religion being forced upon a player in the locker room? Is it a different concern if the coaches are doing it versus another player? If the head coach is doing this and making a player feel comfortable or uncomfortable, is that a different concern than if the team captain is doing this?
Absolutely. The coaches are agents of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Players are not. You know, there's been some litigation about this at the high school level. You know, I actually, you know, won a case about prayers over the public address system before high school football games in Texas. That was held unconstitutional in the Supreme Court. There are cases in courts of appeals about the coaches actively leading the prayer, and that hasn't been in the Supreme Court, but the lower courts say that's unconstitutional. You know, the coaches need to maintain a position of neutrality among the various views about religion. Now, obviously, the coaches have had some role here in creating an environment or inviting the Fellowship of Christian Athletes in, but they have to be very, very careful. The coaches are in an entirely different position from the players.
That's what I've wondered, though, is it seems like in looking at this that the Fellowship of Christian Athletes have come up with kind of a clever way to get around this, which is, suppose this chaplain operates on a volunteer basis, even though he works full time with the university.
So the university's not paying. He's not an employee of the state.
Funded. So they obviously know the law, and they're just going around this. But I still wonder the degree to which that's just kind of a little dance, and whether that sort of influence still exists there in the locker room.
Well, you know, it's a little dance. It's built into the Constitution. If you're an employee of the state, you're under the Establishment Clause. If you're not an employee of the state, or even if you are an employee but you're acting in your private capacity, you're under the Free Speech and Free Exercise Clause. So that line, or that dance, if you want to call it that, is part of the freedom of choice about religion the Constitution
protects. But not everybody has access to the locker room. Just because this gentleman is a volunteer,
right?
I don't have access to the locker room to to espouse my religious beliefs, does allowing this gentleman access to the players, is that, you know, are we just sort of blurring the line here as opposed to breaking?
Well, that's a serious question. You know, preferential access.
We have 6 minutes left.
Preferential access in some contexts is a constitutional problem.
And I also want to just add a little to that. When a coach, like it seems like Coach Lund and Coach Bennett as well, when they're as outspoken about their religious beliefs as well, does that contribute to that a little bit? I mean, it creates this environment where I would think as a player you develop some kind of expectation of how you might want to conform to this incredible authority figure.
Right.
Is that valid?
11:54 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Jason Whitehead, a freelance journalist for the article that we're discussing. Matt Hedstrom, a professor at UVA Department of Religious Studies, and Douglas Laycock, professor from UVA's law school. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And let me thank L. Oppelman's for their support. They are Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, mandolins, violins, banjos, and available complete drum sets. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and online it's loppelman.com. And just a few minutes left with our guests. Let me tell you that next Sunday we'll have Georgetown Veterinary Clinic's Dr. Mike Feetz on to take calls about the pets. Call up, ask the vet about your pet next Sunday. Just slightly different from our conversation today about religious constitutional conversations. That's the great thing about this show. We jump all around. We're not locked in for anything in particular. Professor Hedstrom, bring you back in here. As far as religion goes, the question that we just talked about was access. Have you found or is there any history about specific methods being used to blur the law, get around the law, like might possibly be happening here with a volunteer for the locker room?
Well, so the Fellowship of Christian Athletes is using the same method that a whole host of what we call parachurch organizations use. So parachurch organization meaning not a particular denomination, but a group that sort of operates outside of denominational structures, like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, but like Campus Crusade for Christ. Right? This is another organization that was formed right after World War II, that has chapters, colleges and universities, I believe high schools now, across the country. And they do the same thing. They have religious workers on campuses that are employed by Campus Crusade for Christ, or are volunteers working with Campus Crusade for Christ. So therefore, they can be very present on campus, but not agents of the campus or the state in the case of a public university. And, you know, but it's not just evangelical Christians. I think they pioneered these kinds of techniques, but there are Hillel organizations, and there are organizations of all kinds of religious faiths that work to have presences on campuses and yet not be employees of those campuses.
Professor Laycock, we got a question here. I don't know whether to read this in a snide manner or not, but I'll read it just as it's printed here. Does the Establishment Clause actually apply to large school athletic departments?
If it's a public university, yes, it does.
But a school like Notre Dame?
No.
I mean, we always sort of fall back onto them in terms of religion and athletics. But at Liberty University, Jason, you mentioned them in your article, do not have to concern themselves with such things, correct?
That's correct.
Right, but the interesting thing I found in talking with different folks was just the degree to which they seem to describe what goes on in public universities as incredibly similar to what does happen in the locker rooms of Liberty or Notre Dame.
All right, gentlemen. One last question is, does taking athletics out of the locker room hurt the school? Do you have any personal belief that that might be the case?
You mean taking religion out of the locker room?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jason?
You know, I have mixed feelings about that because it does seem from looking into it that, as I mentioned much earlier in the program, that it does seem to provide an important framework or for these teams to work under. And then the fact that it is so steeped in the tradition of football, I guess my concern would just be, or my hope would be, that head coaches be perhaps a little more mindful of the degree to the sway that which they hold over these student athletes, and perhaps even be mindful of the fact that what works for one student athlete might not work for the other.
But. Professor Hedstrom.
I would just add that I don't think you can take religion out of the locker room. Athletes and coaches are human beings, and human beings are religious, you know, to a large degree. So it's going to be there. The question is, how is it done? How is it managed? And how do the leaders, what are the leaders' sort of approaches to it?
Well, thank you all for participating today. I just hope that our players who come to UVA are well-behaved and stay out of trouble and win as many games as possible. Yeah. In fact, I think today is Meet the Team Day over at Scott Stadium. Matt Hedstrom, thank you for participating by phone and sitting on the bed for an hour to talk to us.
My pleasure.
Professor Laycock, thank you for being here. Jason, fascinating article.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. All right. Hope to hear everybody joining us again next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, the wake-up call is also supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.